Okay, so let's talk a little bit about glut. It's an interesting topic. Nowadays, it's something that we take for granted a little bit. People started asking questions because we sent out an email some time ago, which was sent to me by the local VOD. And essentially, the email had a picture of a brand of meat that was being sold at Costco, maybe is being sold at Costco, and just wanted to notify everyone that the meat is not glut. So I sent out that email, and then people started asking questions. Well, what is that supposed to mean? Is it kosher? Is it not kosher? Glut? Not glut? What's going on over here? So I said, okay, we got to talk about this. So let's talk about it. as we'll see, it is something that has evolved over time. And as we'll see, it is something that also depends a little bit on where you live. But we'll see the details as we go through it. It's a little bit hashgacha pratis, I guess, that we're learning it this week, because the source of this whole topic really comes from this week's parsha, right? Parshas Mishpatim. The Torah tells us in source number one, "Ve'anshei kodesh tihiyun li," you have to be a holy people. "Uvasar basada tereifa lo sochelu lakelev tashlichunoso." If you have meat that's found in the field, and it's the meat is treifa, right? What we would call treif. The meat is treif. You cannot eat it. Throw it to the dogs. Right, you can feed it to your dog. There's no iser hana. There's no iser to benefit from it. You can feed it to your dog, but you're not permitted to eat this meat. Now the Torah uses the word treifa. Nowadays, if you ask a person, well, what does the word treif mean? They'll tell you anything not kosher. Right, a piece of meat could be treif. A piece of a candy can be treif. A piece of chocolate can be treif. Anything that's not kosher is treif. Now, it's a little bit of a misnomer. It's something that we've just become accustomed to. It's a term that we've been accustomed to, become accustomed to using, but a little bit inaccurately. It's almost akin to people saying, especially young children have the habit of saying this, that on Shabbos, anything that's prohibited is muktzah. Right? It's muktzah to turn on the light on Shabbos. Right? It's not muktzah. Right? It's a malacha. It's two different things. Muktzah is you're not allowed to move something that is that doesn't have a purpose on Shabbos. A malacha is a writing is a malacha on Shabbos. Igniting a fire is a malacha on Shabbos. It's not muktzah, but it's a similar type of idea that sometimes we just use one catchphrase and try to just include everything. It's muktzah. You can't do it on Shabbos. It's muktzah. So a similar type of thing here. That everything is treif, right? It doesn't really mean treif. Now, what does treif mean, right? In the actual word. In terms of the actual wording, what does treif mean? So if you know, we just read not long ago in Parshas Vayeshev Miketz, Tarov Toraf Yosef, right? What's Tarov Toraf Yosef? That Yosef was torn up, he was torn asunder, right? That's the report that the Yaakov put together after being told by the brothers that Yosef was gone, and all that's left is this bloody coat. Okay, Tarov Toraf Yosef, Yosef was torn up. So here, literally, what the word treifa means, is an animal that was torn, attacked by another animal in the field, and that's why that's why the Torah is talking about a field, right? The Torah is talking about you find a carcass, you find meat in a field. There was a fight, and the lion attacked this zebra, and this is what's left of the zebra. So says the Torah, you can't eat the zebra anyway, but says the Torah, you can't. If this was a kosher animal. You cannot eat the meat, but you can get benefit from it. You can give it to your dog. So that's literally what the word treifa means. Now treifa has that's literally what it means. Okay, now Chazal take the word treifa and expand the definition of that word. It's not just an animal that was torn, killed by another animal. Generally, what we refer to an animal that, let's say, wasn't shechted properly, we call that a nevela, right? That's a nevela. That's an animal that wasn't slaughtered properly. So an animal that was slaughtered, but slaughtered improperly. An animal that was hunted or killed by another animal. So we would call that a nevela. A treifa, yeah.
But that has to be a kosher animal to begin with. Correct?
To be a nevela.
Yes.
Okay. So a non-kosher animal is normally called a temeya, right? A behema temeya is a non-kosher animal, and that's that's off limits right at the outset. Even while it's still alive, it's out of the parsha, exactly. So Chazal take this term treifa, and they expand it to mean not just an animal that was killed in the field by another animal tearing it apart, but also any animal that has a certain defect, a physical defect, a physical blemish defect that would cause it to die within the next 12 months. So there are many, many different treifos, and these are complex halachos. We're obviously not going to get into these at all. We're just literally scratching the surface just to give ourselves a picture of what's going on here. But it's just, when an animal has a type of defect, and there are many listed, which we'll see a couple of them, but there are many listed in the Mishnayos and Chulin, and the Gemara expands upon them. But an animal that has some sort of a defect where it's not going to survive because of this defect for the next 12 months, that animal is also called a treifa. Now there is some sort of, you know, connection between that and another animal tearing it apart, because let's say one animal attacks another animal, even if the animal makes it out alive from that attack, but he might very well have some sort of injury that's going to cause him to die within the next 12 months. You know, the animal punctured something by biting him, or whatever the case might be. So that's why that animal is also referred to as a treifa, even if it didn't die at the hands of the other animal right then and there. But if it has some sort of a defect now, a physical defect, that's going to cause it to die, that would also be called a treifa. The Mishnah in Chulin in the third parak, if you look at source number 2, in the parak called Elu Treifos, right? These are the treifos, Elu Treifos Bibehema. These are the treifos in the behema. So the Mishnah goes through many different cases. Many of them are puncture wounds, right? Anytime you have an organ in the body that's punctured, that has a hole in it, so that very often that's going to make the animal a treifa. The Mishnah begins in the kuvas haveshet, right? If you have the esophagus has been punctured, an animal bites it in the neck and now punctures the esophagus, that's going to make it a treifa. The Mishnah goes on to enumerate several other treifos. The membrane of the brain has been damaged. The heart has been punctured. The spine has been broken. Different types of treifos. And then at the very end of the selection that I brought for you of the Mishnah, not at the end of the Mishnah, but the end of the selection that I brought, which is the most important for our discussion tonight, Hareya Shenikva. Hareya Shenikva means a punctured lung. If the lung of an animal has been punctured, so that makes the animal a treifa. An animal cannot live with a punctured lung for very long. It can live for a short period of time, but it's not going to live very long, and therefore that animal is called a treifa if it has a punctured lung. Now, generally speaking, many of these treifos are uncommon. Many of these treifos, the Mishnah lists a whole slew of treifos here. Many of them are uncommon. And because many of them are uncommon, the Shulchan Aruch writes in source number 3, Ein sarich livdok achar shum treifos min astam. We don't have to just, you know, go start checking the animal that has just been slaughtered to check and see if it has any of these treifos. You know, we have a whole list, a whole slew in the Mishnah of all these treifos. So that you don't need someone who's going to go check now the animal after it's been slaughtered, open up the animal, and start checking all of the organs and everything to make sure that these treifos don't exist. Right? That's not necessary. Except for, writes the Shulchan Aruch, chutz min areya, except for the lung. Except for the lung. The lung is an exception. Tzarich livdok bibehema v'chaya im yesh ba sircha. You have to check the lung to see if there's some sort of a sircha. Now a sircha is some sort of a growth on the lung. And we'll see a little bit more about it, soon. But it's indicative, in many cases, of a puncture wound, and that's why you have to check the lung for this sircha. If you find a sircha, so that's going to make the lung a treifa. Yeah.
Why does he leave out bird? Why you could check the lung? Bird has lungs.
Okay, we'll get to birds. We'll talk about birds. It's a good question. Fowl is different.
I'm saying why.
Well, you'll see. You'll see. Yeah. We'll get to it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Normally, how does the lung get punctured? I mean, unless somebody shoots it with like a bow and arrow or a pistol, how would the lung get punctured?
Good question. I don't know.
Well,
I don't know.
The punctures include, you know, the lungs have two membranes, and there's no air in between the two membranes. So if one rips off the other,
yeah,
for some reason, you can get a puncture. That would be included in a puncture, I would think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
it's
most common, the adhesions.
Yeah, right. So there's a lot of complex discussion in the, we're going to see, I just took a line out of a Gemara in Chulin Adaf Mem Vav, But the Gemara in Chulin discusses these two membranes at length. You know, discusses these things. Well, you know, we're doing things. You know, we're just going for a general overview here. It's a good question, but we're you know, let's see. Well, what? Yeah. Okay, now let's keep going in the Shulchan Aruch a little bit. And he writes very strong words here. He says in the second line, "Poreitz geder leechol below bedika." Anyone who breaches the fence, right, breaches the fence of tradition. We're talking about whenever the poskim employ, this is a pasuk in Tehillim, Yishchenu Nachash, a snake should bite him. So this is a pasuk in Tehillim, which is very often used for, obviously not breaches in a physical fence, but breaches in the spiritual fence, breaches in the fence of tradition. Okay, so anyone who eats without checking the lungs, he says, it's not a good thing. Yishchenu Nachash curses this person, it's not a good thing. And therefore writes the Ramah, Hagav Enagu, Gam Kein Linfoach Kol Reya, Afilu Leis Bareyosa. Even a perfectly good lung, it looks fine, right? It doesn't seem like anything on it. What do? We inflate the lung, okay, to check and see if there's any punctures. Ubiktas mekomos mekinlin shelolin afcha rakim haisa basircho veres ayde mishmush v'cheneker. He says, but in some places they don't inflate every single lung, only a lung that has, you know, something on it that was removed. So then we have to inflate it to see if there's a puncture wound or not. Okay, that's different. Minhagim, is every lung inflated? Is every lung not inflated? By the way, it's interesting when they inflate the lung. So what do they do? How do they determine if there's a hole? Because even if there's a small puncture, they submerge it in water, right? If you like a tire, exactly. That's the first time I saw that, right? Where they stick the tire or they spritz it sometimes with that soapy water. You know, very complex, mechanics secret. You know, they spritz it with some soapy water, and wherever the bubbles start coming out, that's where the puncture is. So too, right? They inflate the lung, they stick it, they submerge it in water, and where the bubbles are coming from, if there are any bubbles, then they know that, okay, there must be some sort of a puncture in the lung.
The term sircha, where does that root come from? Is that
puncture? No, sircha means like an adhesion. Yeah, sircha, like a lisroch, is to cling to.
Scar?
Sometimes it can be scar tissue, but it's, okay. You know, it's some sort of adhesion on the, it's some sort of a tissue growth on the lung itself. Well, we'll see a little bit more about that.
That shows that there was a puncture.
We'll see. Yeah, we'll see. Okay. So comes the Shach and just explains very clearly in source number 4 that the reason why we don't have to check, the rov behemos becheskas ksheros hein. Right, most behemos, most animals, we assume are ksheros. We don't have to assume that they're trefos. We assume that they're ksheros, and therefore we do not have to check. Minastam, we do not have to check for these kind of things. Very interesting. Rav Moshe Sternbach, who wrote the Tshuvos VaHanhagos, he was the chief rabbi in South Africa. And also a rabbi in the Eda HaCharedis in Yerushalayim. I think he split his time. You know, some people do Florida and New York. So he did South Africa and Yerushalayim. But so he writes, this is a fascinating, it's just a little bit out of a tshuva that he wrote in source number 5. He writes that when it comes to birds, okay, when it comes to fowl, he writes, Lifnim b'Yisrael lo badku klal hareos be'of. They never checked bird lungs. They never checked them. Bird lungs were never checked. Why? Because when it came to fowl, it was very, very uncommon to find trefos in bird lungs, right? In chicken lungs, it was very, very uncommon. But he says, but nowadays, we do find, right? Things have changed. Nowadays, we do find many more things, questions, on the lungs of birds. And he writes, why has this changed? Right? V'tam hadavar, shelifnim lo badku hareos. Why is it that originally they never checked the lungs? Dibiz, again, of a fowl we're talking about here. Dibizman hahu gadlu haofos baofen TV. He says in the past, chickens were raised naturally, you know, organically. They just, they roamed, they did what they did. They were raised naturally. And it was very uncommon for anything to happen that would really damage the lungs. Aval ze kama shanim sheimtziu durachim lefatema ofos. But now, what are the chicken farmers are very zealous. It's a business. So what do? They got to fatten them up, right? So they want these chickens to get big and fat very quickly, so that they can, as soon as they're born, fatten them up, shech them, and let's move on, Right? This is a business here. We gotta make money. Achehem gedelim uruuyim l'shchita kvar begil chodshayim opachos. He says sometimes even a month or two, and already they shech these chickens after just a month or two of being alive. You know, because they fatten them up, and he says they give them like injections. You know, they have all these things that we're familiar with that they do. Aval kanireh shebiglal hazrikos ein abriim kimikodem. He says, but it seems that because of this, they're not healthy. These chickens are not healthy, right? You give them these injections, you're fattening them up, and you're rushing them to grow. It's not a healthy thing. V'hem regishim lepigia bereos, and they're very sensitive to their lungs. They become very sensitive to anything. Gam taloy machzikim esaofos bechutz. He says also it depends where you keep them. Nowadays, many of the chickens are kept outside. I guess the chicken farms are very big, or they have a lot of chickens. They keep them outdoors. She'az bechoref pigim yoser lemachla. Right, and they keep them outside in the winter. It's cold. The chickens get sick easier. Oshehim uchzakim b'makomos segurim. Akupanim b'rov makomos be'Europa uba America v'kan b'darom Africa. He says most places in Europe, America, and South Africa, tzarech mumchius lahargish hapsulim b'rei. He says more and more psulim are creeping in to these chicken lungs. And he says you need people who are experts. You know, people for centuries have been checking cow lungs. So that's something that many people know how to do. But chicken lungs, it's not such a common thing. So it's becoming more and more common. But people really have to brush up on their training as to how exactly to check them. It's just an interesting phenomenon. We'll see a little more about chickens in a little bit. But that's just an interesting tidbit that you see that sometimes these things can change over time, and depending on the place, depending on the conditions. And you might have, certain places where the lungs are fine and certain places where you have problems in the lungs. Okay. So here, where we really get into the question of glad is really from a Gemara in Chulin and Daf Mem Vav. And the Gemara talks about the lobes of the lungs. And the Gemara says, Yom HaRava, Hanei Tarte Unei De Serichon Lahadade. If you have some sort of adhesion, the two lobes of the lungs that are kind of like stuck together, they're stuck together a little bit. Leis lehu bedika, says Rava in the Gemara, you cannot check those lungs. Impossible. You cannot check those lungs, and therefore you have to assume, right? Since we know that you check all lungs because lungs do have these common problems, so therefore you have to assume the animal's treif. You can't check those lungs where you have this type of adhesion. Writes Rashi on that Gemara, what's going on here? Why are we concerned? Shesircha zu machmas nekev hi ba'a. Writes Rashi, because when you have this sircha, when you have this adhesion, this tissue growing on the lung, it comes because of a nekev. There must be a puncture wound there, and that's why this tissue is growing. Shemitok shehareya shoeves komine mashke vehamashke nase of besocha kimin galaria. So here he's describing the science a little bit, that the lung is absorbing some fluid, and the fluid becomes very thick. V'yotze me'at me'at derech ha'nekev, and now there's a hole, so that fluid is seeping out, slowly seeping out from this hole. Nakfa v'nase kerum. So what happens is, the fluid seeps out, and then it solidifies, and it congeals, and then somehow the tissue grows around that, that hole. Kach matzasa b'tshuvas ha'ga'onim, he says, and that's what I found in the tshuva. And he says that even though, technically speaking, you would say, well, if this tissue is growing over the hole, so then maybe that seals the hole, right? It's a trefa. Lung is a trefa if it has this hole, a puncture. But now it's not punctured anymore because I have this tissue that's growing over the hole to seal it up. So he says that even though that's technically what's going on, v'yafmishu sose manekev in motzi ruach, right now if you would submerge this lung in, you would inflate it and submerge it in water, nothing would happen because the sircha, this adhesion, is covering up the puncture. Nevertheless, ha'amoran krum sha'olam achmas maka bereya ena krum sha'sofal yisaser. He says that's not considered a valid part of the membrane. It's something that grew after the fact just because of the puncture wound, and therefore that's not considered a valid part of the membrane, and this reya, this lung, is considered a punctured reya, and therefore it's considered a trefa. Tosfos there in Chulin in source number 8, is a long Tosfos, I just took out a line, but he disagrees a little bit, and he says that it's not because when there's a sircha there, it's not necessarily because there's a puncture wound there, But he writes, "V'hayanira lefaresh diregila hasircha lavo b'chomakom bereya below nekev." Right, a sircha can grow anywhere on the lung, even without a puncture, even without a hole. You can have this adhesion growing on the lung. Mitochshi shoeves kol minei mashke, a similar type of idea because of the fluid buildup. V'hadet trefa shelo kesidron haynu mishum shesofa lihisparek v'chashiv kinekuva kevan shesofa linakev. He says what ends up happening with these adhesions is that the adhesions can, you know, can kind of break apart. And once they break apart, so then you're going to have problems. Then that can cause a puncture in the lung. And because of those, because of that, you're going to have some problems, because as a result of this sircha. So it's just a question in terms of, you know, what we're concerned about. Rashi's concerned that this sircha is a sign of an existing puncture wound. And Tosfos is concerned that no, the sircha might not be a sign of an existing puncture wound, but actually might be the cause of a future puncture wound. And therefore, both of them, I mean, it's just a question of how to understand it, but both of them agree that when you have this type of sircha on a lung, when you have this type of adhesion on a lung, that this makes the lung a trefa because of this. Turning to the second side of the page, the question is, so is there anything to do about this? Right? You shecht an animal, you shecht a cow. Cows are expensive, right? You shecht a cow, and now you find on the lung a sircha. So is there anything to do? Or is it just, that's it, I got to write it off, sell it to the guy, and that's it, you know, and I got to, you know, move on to the next cow. Right? So right comes the Rosh, and says, this is the Rosh there on that Gemara in Chulin, in source number 9, and he writes that there might be something to do. There might be something to do about it. And here's where things get a little bit interesting when it comes to when it comes to glot. Comes the Rush and says, V'afal gav de asikna de ein sircha below nekev. He says, even though it's true that whenever you have a sircha there, there's going to be a hole. Either there was a hole, there's going to be a hole, it's a problem. However, nihige lahatir sircha teluya. But he said certain types of sirchas, right? He talks about a teluya. It sounds like one that's kind of like protruding or it's coming off of the lung a little bit. He says that our custom is to allow. We allow that type of sircha. Not every sircha is a problem in a lung. That type of sircha is okay. Why? So he writes that that a sircha that comes because of, that becomes as a result of a puncture is going to be much closer and much tighter, tightly connected to the lung. Whereas the sircha that's hanging off a little bit or it's a little bit loose, it's not as connected. So that type of sircha is not evidence of a puncture wound. And he writes, skipping down a little bit, he tells us a little story about the Gaonim. If you look four lines down, he says, Pam achas, nichnesu marav tzadok gaon umaravimi, v'kama gaonim v'tamidei meitzel mar Yaakov gaon. And we're not used to hearing about all these Gaonim. There are several Gaonim that are famous, Rav Hai Gaon, and certain Gaonim, Rav Achoy Gaon, certain Gaonim that are very famous, people have heard of them. Many of these are obscure Gaonim. But the Rosh says, one time, Rav Tzadok Gaon, Maravimi, other Gaonim, and their Talmidim came to Mar Yaakov Gaon. It sounds like he was like a big Rosh Yeshiva, and they came into him. V'yamrulo, and they heard, Shomanu alecha sh'atamatir hasaruch l'shuman halev l'perek ulunafeach v'kosher. L'farek ulunafeach v'kosher. He says, we heard that you're matir, a certain type of sircha. There's a certain type of adhesion that we heard that you allow. You know, tell us about this, right? It sounds like almost like a Senate confirmation hearing here, right? You know, tell us about this position that we heard that you have, you know, at one point. Amar lahem, chas v'shalom. Chas v'shalom, right? Also sounds like a Senate confirmation hearing, right? Chas v'shalom. Lo kach ani matir. He says, no. I don't just matir things, you know, like that. Exactly. Ela lefamim shemitoch rov shuman alei v'shuman abehema, Nisrach l'umos u'le'unos u'le'i nunisa devarda. He says sometimes you have adhesions that are not really sirchas. They're not really adhesions. It's a different type of adhesion. So it's not like I'm just matir adhesions. There's a certain type of adhesion that is not really an adhesion. It's because of the buildup of fat and this and that. It's not really an adhesion the way that the Gemara is referring to it. And he says, and therefore, what did I do? V'yitarti le'echoz hakone ulenanea es hareya shlosha ve'arba'a pe'amim yafe. So what I allowed them to do is to take the lung, okay, to take the lung and to you know, just like give it a little shake, a few times, 3-4 times, give it a little shake, okay? Im tinote kasircha me'eleha ani machshira. If the sircha falls off by itself, so then I permit it. I don't permit just to, like, you know, remove sirchas or I just matzir sircha. No, no, no. I have a system. I take the lung, shake, give it a little shake, 3-4 times. If the sircha falls off by itself, so then I matzir it. Avalafarik biyad lo hitarti, says, but I never allowed anyone to actually remove a sircha by hand. That I never allowed. V'hiskimu kol b'nei ha-yeshiva v'horu kein l'chol Yisrael. And he says, oh, they heard this from Mar Yaakov Gaon. Everybody said, this is gevaldik, this is great. They passed in this way, they wrote it up in a responsum, and they sent it out to the entire Jewish people. Mar Yaakov Gaon allows you to do this. This certain type of sircha we allow. V'chei noagin be'eretz Ashkenaz, and says the Rosh, this is the custom in Germany, in the Ashkenazic lands. The kol sircha she nitekes kishatabach machnis yado benachas livdokes hareya. Any time the butcher, the shoychet, sticks his hand into the lung to check it, right? They stick their hand in and they feel around in the lung. Any time that the shoychet does that, or the bodek, and the sircha just like falls off, just comes off by itself, armina delav sircha hi. We said that wasn't a sircha. That's not an adhesion. El rear bama, it's just a buildup of some tissue or something like that. It just fell off. That's fine. No problem. Shenis pashit mi lachus hareya uksherin. That's fine.
Is that your mouth? If you put your hand in there,
yeah,
I can push real hard or I can push a little bit. So is it anything if I push real hard?
He says benachas. Can't push real hard.
Benachas?
Gently. Yeah.
Gentle is an eye.
Yeah. I guess a shochet's gentle might be different than an accountant's gentle. Gentle, no sircha, right? But gentle. So the question is this something that we rely upon, right? This sounds pretty good, okay? At least it's something. You know, certain types of sirchas, we can maybe, if they remove easily, you know, we can be matir the animal. Comes a Shulchan Aruch and says, Chas v'sholem to rely on this, right? Says the Shulchan Aruch. Comes the Shulchan Aruch. The Beis Yosef, exactly, in source number 10, and he writes, Kol makom she'asru siruchas hareya, any time that the Chazal prohibited an adhesion on the lung, ein hefresh bein shetei asircha daka kechut ha-saira, I don't care if the adhesion is very fine, very thin, bein shetei ava v'chazaka ruchava kegodel, I don't care if it's very thick and big, it doesn't make a difference. And writes the Shulchan Aruch, listen to this, v'lo ke'osam she'memachim b'yad, not like those people who start messing around with it, right? There are some people who start messing around with the sirchas, you know, to try to see if they can pop them off. Chas v'shalom. V'im nismacha tolun lahakam. They say, oh, if it comes off easily, then it's okay. Then you can be lenient. Says the Shulchan Aruch, v'chol hanoe kein ki'ilu machil trefos li'Yisrael. Whoa. If you do this, says the Shulchan Aruch, you're feeding Jews treif. You're feeding Jews treif. Right? You're feeding Jews trade. Very, very strong words here. He does not like this business whatsoever of playing around with the sirchas. He says, you have a sircha in the lung, it's done. Right? The animal is trade. Oh, very good. Good. Okay? So this is the Shulchan Aruch. This is Simen Lamites, where we discuss many of these laws of trefa. And this is Se'if Yud. Okay? So comes the Ramah, 3 Se'ifim later. Right? Comes the Ramah, 3 Se'ifim later, Se'if Yud Gimel. And he writes, comes the Rama in source number 11. And the Rama says, okay, not so fast. Not so fast. You don't have to be so strong about this, you know, Mr. Shulchan Aruch. Relax a little. Writes the Rama, V'yesh ma'atirin l'mashmish b'sirchos l'mayich bohen. He says, there are those that allow you to, you know, to kind of play with them gently and see if they can come off. It's like a srogim. You know, sometimes for the esrog meicherim, you know, you have a little dot, so you kind of like, you know, you play around with it a little bit and see if the dot comes off. Maybe it's dirt. You know, the problem is if you play around with it too much, and then you nick the rind, it becomes a chaser, and you pass the esrog. So you have to be careful. Right? But, you know, so some says that Ramah, some allow you to kind of play around with the sircha a little bit. The Omerim, they say, Shesircha mimayich adam ba kol ayom lo tinatek. And their logic is that a real sircha is not going to come off. You can play with it the whole day. It's not going to come off, a real sircha. But if you can kind of, you know, just wiggle it off, so then it's fine. They say it's not really a sircha, it's just rear, it's a buildup of fluid, and it's okay. Writes the Rama, where it's underlined. The af al pishahu kula gedola. Right, the Rama says, this is a big kula. It's a big kula. Right? He's not. It's not like he's clicking his heels over this. This is a big kula. Nevertheless, he says, Kvar nahagu kol b'nei medinos elu. He says, this is the custom. In all of these countries, the Ashkenazi countries, the Rush himself, right, if you remember, said that in the Ashkenaz, they had this minhag to rely on this. Ve'ein limchos b'yadam. The Rama says, no, you don't stop them. Don't protest if people are doing this. Me'achar sheyesh lahem amasha yismochu. They have what to rely on. Right? Mar Yaakov Gon said it, it's brought in the Rush. Other shitos also, they have what to rely on, and therefore he says you don't stop them. Umikol makom, he says, nevertheless, tzarich lihios habodek yirei elokim, sheyodea lizar lemarech benachash lo yinotek bekoach. He says you have to make sure that the guy who's doing this knows what he's doing. He's got to be a frum guy. He's got to be an erlecha guy, a yirei elokim. You know, you have to make sure that the bodek who's doing this is doing it properly. Because if you mess up, if he's doing it too hard, and he's popping off the sirchas, and now you're feeding trefus to Jewish people, that's not a good thing. So you have to make sure that the bodik, the person who's checking the lungs, is doing it properly. He's a Yirei Elokim, he's a real Yirei Shemaim, you have to make sure. Okay, so then he starts being mechalik. We're not going to read all this inside, but he starts distinguishing between different types of sirchas, you know, different places had all different minhagim. Okay, but then if you skip down to the next part where it's underlined, he writes, Avala minhag bi'irenu. Right, writes the Rama. I guess I assume he's talking about Krakow. Right, he writes that the minhag in our country, in our place here, lemashmish ulemaich bechol hasirchos. He says, well, you know, we play around with all the sirchos. It doesn't matter, you know, what they look like. You know, certain places had certain minhagim only to touch. You know, certain sirchos. He says, no, we do all them. Vein chiluk bein sircha lesircha, and he writes v'nachon lachush lemashika safti. And he says, but I did tell you, keep in mind, I told you that this is a big kula. It's a big kula. So he says it's proper to try to avoid using this kula, im lo behefsed meruba. Unless it's a hefsed meruba, unless you're going to lose a lot of money. If you're going to lose a lot of money, so then maybe you can rely on this kula. But if you're not going to lose so much money, it's not such a great thing to jump and to rely on this kula. And this is really, this machlokas here, this is really the basis of what's call of what glot is and what non-glot is. Glot means smooth. Okay? Glot means smooth. It's Yiddish for smooth. So literally, a real glot piece of meat means that the animal's lung was checked and found to be completely smooth, with no adhesions whatsoever. That's really what the word glot means. Okay? Now, the Rama himself seems to be saying that in those days, many people rely on these kulas to check the, you know, to kind of play with the sirchas and check them, and if they popped off, then they would be mad to them. That meat is called not glot. That's not glot meat. Okay? If the lung actually has a puncture, then everybody agrees it's treif. That's not a question. That's certainly treif. The real question of glot versus non-glot is when you have these questionable sirchas, the question is, can I test them or can I not test them? Okay? If the lung has some sircha and I tested it and it just came right off, and therefore I allow that meat, that's called non-glot. That's non-glot. If the lung was completely smooth, without anything, no need to test, it was completely smooth, that's glot meat. So the Rama seems to be saying that, listen, it's better to eat glot. It's better to eat glot, right? Because there you don't run into these questions, you don't run into this machlokas. We know the Shulchan Aruch was very upset about this. So it's better to eat glot. Better to find meat that's completely, you know, adhesion-free, you don't have to worry about it, that's glot meat. It's better to do that. He says if it's a hefsed meruba, or in his time, many places had the minhag to eat a non-glot meat, which means to check and to remove these easily removable sirchas, so then the Rama says, then you can do it, then you can rely on that. Okay? That's essentially the distinction between what's glot and what's non-glot. And therefore, non-glot does not mean not kosher. Right? You can have meat that's non-glot, but that's kosher. It was shechted properly. Everything else was checked through. There was a little sircha maybe on the lung. They tested that sircha. The sircha came off easily, and therefore they said, this meat is fine. That's non-glot meat. That's non-glot meat. So here we go. Now, just before we get to that, and that we're going to get to that next, but before we get to that, it's very important that Rama finishes off here, and he says this whole discussion is only when it comes to cows. Only when it comes to beef. Okay? Gassos. Big animals. However, Onahagu bi'irenu at the very end of that Rama. Lahatrif kol sirchos gidiyim utloyim. Any of these small animals, goats, right? Any of these things, lamb, va'agolim harakim calf, okay? All of these things, and also the post can add in fowl as well, okay, which are also small animals. All of these small animals, v'lo lamayich bahem klal. He says there, the minog was never to touch them. You don't touch these things, right? This minog to play with them a little bit and see if they pop off easily, that's only when it came to the big animals, only when it came to the cows. When it comes to chicken, when it comes to lamb, calf, you know, goat meat, all these types of meats, you don't touch the lung at all. If it's not glot, treif. It's either glot or treif. That's it when it comes to these things. And that's why that is true. Now, right, even nowadays, we don't, the boat, nobody touches these things. If there's a sirch on the lung of these animals, again, you don't necessarily have to check. For the fowl lungs, for example, you might not have to check depending on the circumstances. But if you find something and you find a sircha, it's treif. That's it. There's no question. So therefore, when it comes, if you have somebody tell you that the chicken is glot, it's not really so accurate, right? Because really, chicken, I mean, all chicken is glot. If it's kosher, it's glot, right? If it's not glot, it's treif. When it comes to chicken, excuse me, I'm not 100% sure. My impression, even though Rav Moshe Shtumbach wrote that in America, many chicken lugs are problematic. My impression from reading up a little bit on the kashrus websites and you know what some of them have to say, it seems that they're still. I think that they're still not checked 100%. The chicken lugs.
Yeah,
they might see something.
But it's not glot then.
Then it's treif. There's no such thing as non-glot kosher chicken meat, right? If it's non-glot, it's treif. When it comes to chicken, when it comes to lamb, when it comes to all these things.
So by doctors, they check like they check by glasses.
I don't think so. I'm not 100% sure about that. That I'm not 100% sure about if they actually do check.
Remember they had a problem with the veal many years ago?
Yeah.
Because they kept them caged. So the problem with the circus is if the animal doesn't get enough exercise,
right,
the lungs don't develop. So that's really
the circus develop. Right.
So they said that the amount of kosher veal that was being shed is statistical impossibility.
So, okay, right.
I don't know whether they check.
Yes,
it.
I'm not 100% sure. I think that they do. I think just chickens them were more makel because it's less common. Although, like as Rav Moshe Shtumbach said, if even in chickens. So I read one article. I read said that in Eretz Yisrael there's a greater likelihood when it comes to chicken of there being problems with the lungs. And that's why I think in Eretz Yisrael they started checking chicken lugs because they had this. So there's a certain disease that was developing in chickens in Israel, and they were checking them. And that's why in Eretz Yisrael you'll have mahadrin and not mahadrin, mahadrin chicken and not mahadrin chicken. So there actually is a difference. It's not glot or not glot, but in general we don't check chicken lungs. But in Eretz Yisrael, because of this disease, people were they started checking chicken lungs, and that's why the ones that are checked are called mahadrin. And the ones that are not checked, they're called not mahadrin. And that's why sometimes you'll see in Eretz Yisrael, mahadrin, rabbanu, mahadrin, rabbanu, not mahadrin. And that's what it is. It's a real thing.
Well,
it's not.
Are
mahadrin. Yeah. It's like most things are chalav Yisrael and pas Yisrael. Yeah.
Is there meat sold today under the OU or reputable hashkafa that's not?
Okay, so that's a good question. Okay, so here's where it gets a little interesting. So statistically speaking, nowadays it's one statistic that I saw. Was that approximately only 1 in 20 cows are actually glot.
Right,
only 1 in 5%. Right. A very, very small minority are actually glot.
That's why the big glot, like a Rablando,
right.
they try to take a young cow or a wheel.
Right.
That's why they got the company not to sell the clothes, because a wheel is very expensive.
Uh-huh.
That's why it's not an it's no
part right.
of the wheel, because no clean for him, Dokrani.
Right.
Right.
Right. Right. So, but it actually is getting a little tricky because only about 1 in 20 is actually glot. Mm-hmm. So what's happening now is because the statistics are so much not in our favor, the definition of glot is being expanded.
Yeah.
The definition is being expanded. So when we eat glot meat, the likelihood of that being really, really smooth is almost nil. It's probably not 100% smooth. When we eat glot meat, what they're doing is they're going for they have to. There's no choice. You can't buy glot meat that's really, really glot. I mean, it's uncommon. So therefore, what's happening is that most of the meat that we buy, has probably there was something on the lung. They of course tested it. We're not talking about a real treifa, obviously. But they tested it, and there's different levels of these sirchas. So the kind of like the very low level sirchas, they remove them and then they still call that glot. That's essentially what's happening in the market when we talk about glot. When you see in the stores chalak beit Yosef, okay, chalak beit Yosef, that's really glot. That's really smooth. Why? Because the Sfardim, you read the Shulchan Aruch, he says you're eating treif, right, if you do this. So many Sfardim are makbid, much more makbid than Ashkenazim, about this glot issue, and that's why you'll find what's called chalak beit Yosef glot, which is, that's really glot, really smooth, and then what we eat is smooth. It's smooth, you know, not 100% smooth.
That makes a difference if it's not.
No, the shchid, yeah, right. So that's essentially where things are standing nowadays. Just a very interesting. The Chassam Sofer in source number 12 writes that the Chassam Sofer already, you know, many years ago, but he writes already that a person who eats this type of meat that we're calling, you know, glot, or you know, might have something on it, but again, it was tested and removed in a kosher way. So he writes, you know, it's okay as long as it was done properly. Yochlu anovim v'yisbo. He says it's fine to eat it. You don't have to worry about it. He says nevertheless, shomer nafsho yirchak mikol kayotze b'zeh. He says a person who really wants to be careful. You know, that's why you might find Ashkenazim who are only eating chalak beit Yosef meat because they want to be super machmir. They want to be super careful, and therefore they don't want to deal with this at all. Yeah.
So now I'm a little bit lost. Yeah. Differences
between nowadays glot and non-glot.
What we call
good.
Glot today,
okay. Good. Okay.
Non-glot.
Okay. So the non-glot means that you have even the high level sirchas. Okay. Again, like I said, there's different levels. I can't even tell you. I don't even know. You know, I'm not familiar with all of the adhesions and everything like that. But there is basically. It seems to me that there's some low level ones and higher level ones. So the low level ones will, you know, remove, we'll test and we'll remove them, and if they come off and everything is fine, we'll call that glot still. But if you have these higher level ones, which is what the Rama was talking about, he was talking about removing even the more serious ones. Right. You know, as long as they are tested properly and removed properly, so that would be considered non-glot. Okay. In other words, so non-glot, again, it can still be kosher, but you're dealing with already a more serious type of testing and removal, so, as opposed to what we call glot nowadays, which is kind of like the low level.
So the question Gail asked, though, about non-glot meat under whose hashgacha?
Yeah, good question. Okay, good. So I don't think that you're going to find, I think that the reputable agencies, you know, I don't think that you'll find OU meat that is what we would call non-glot. You know, again, they're probably using this, you know, the glot, the expanded glot, right? We'll call it the expanded glot. So I think that they're using that definition, as many of the kashrus agencies are. But I don't think it goes to that level of being non-glot, which is why when the Vod sent out that notice, it was because that meat, you know, had hechsherim, right? It had hechsherim. And some people were confused because there were different hechsherim on it, you know, but that happens a lot when it comes to meat. You have, you know, sometimes 3 or 4 hechsherim on a piece of meat. But so that meat was certified non-glot. Meaning this is non-glot. This is the kula of the Rama. This is the kula that the Rush is bringing. So that's not what we're relying on day to day when we eat glot. We're relying on a modified version of that kula. Yeah.
So 2 questions. What gives us the right to modify the definition of glot?
So again, it's really just a supply and demand. Meaning, you could say, listen, I'm only eating chalak beis Yosef. Right, I want to be machmir like the Chassam Sofer says. Shomer nafsho yirchak mikol zeh. I want to be machmir, so I'm going to go into the store and I'm going to eat chalak beis Yosef. I imagine that it's more expensive, right? You have to, you know, you have to pay for it because it's only 1 in 20 cows.
No,
so you know you have to.
19 cows
in Ashkenazim. It's not a big deal. Yeah, I understand. So you know, so you can do that, but at the same time, there is a real basis for relying on these heterim. This is not; these are not like, you know, new. You know, these are not you know, new rabbis coming along with kulas that we never heard of before. I mean, we're already in the Rush. We're talking about the times of the Gaonim. They were doing this, you know, centuries and centuries ago. And the Rama writes that it was an established custom. So that's why, again, we try to minimize relying on it as much as we can. But at the same time, people want to eat meat. You know, people want meat, and they want to have it available.
So, and why it's so terrible.
Again, if you're relying on this, it's not the end of the world. Okay. According to the Shulchan Aruch, it's like you're eating treif, right? But according to the Rama, it's not the end of the world, right? It's not the end of the world, and in fact, From what I understand, in America, you know, decades ago, there was no glot meat. All the meat was non-glot.
In Europe also,
it was all non-glot. That's what people had. That's what people could afford. That's what they had. It wasn't, you know, that's the way it was. Nowadays, you know, we can afford a little bit more. We try to up the standards a little bit. So we pushed it. It's not the end of the world, according to the Rambam. Right, it's an established minhag, and he's right, you have what to rely on, don't protest. He says, but, you know, he himself wrote, it's a big kula, and if you can, it's better to avoid it. Which is why, in general, in the kashrus industry, we try to avoid it if we can, or we try to minimize it as much as we can.
So non-glad would be that they checked the lung, and according to the Ramah, we hold the non-glad is what the Ramah is calling, if it's a simple sirka.
Correct.
If it was even a high level sirfa,
again, it's hard, these terms are just terms that I use.
So a sirfa, if you're able to get rid of it, that would be.
If it sounds like if you can get rid of it easily,
if you can get rid of it, but if you can't get rid of the sirfa.
No, if you can't get rid of it, then it's treif.
Then it's treif.
Yeah, yeah.
So you got rid of this.
Meaning, but
sirfa,
even within the sirfas that are removable, there's still like a sliding scale of the low level sirfas and the high level sirfas.
So glot would be that it has to
glot would be, like Ashkenazi glot nowadays would be that it has a low-level sircha that was removed.
A low-level sircha.
Yeah.
And what would be
non-glot? It has a high-level sircha that was removed.
Oh, okay, so you're differentiating between the sirchas.
Correct,
and
yeah.
But if you don't check the chicken at all,
right,
then how can you call it glot?
That's what I'm saying. The whole notion of glot chicken is a misnomer.
Right.
Chicken always has to be glot.
Has to be glot.
We assume it's glot.
Because again, most of them don't have any issues.
Correct. Now again, like the Rav Moshe Schnurbach saying, depending on the circumstances, if you have a place or you have a time where that changes, they might have to start checking them. You know, but those have to be glot. There's no option.
Just eat, whether it says glot, not glot, lost the hashkafa, it's fine.
It doesn't matter, right? They're right. Yeah, yeah.
Chicken is becheskes glot.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's say the sircha is very serious. And it can't be removed, so the animal is being treif.
Right.
Why don't we just say that the lungs are treif, and the rest of the animal is kosher?
No, because once the lungs are treif, the whole animal is treif. It's not that's when we call an animal treif. It's because there's a vital organ like the lungs,
right,
that has a defect like this. That makes the whole animal treif. There's no such thing as a treif organ. Right? There's only a treif animal.
Okay.